Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need some. You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Help, you know I need someone.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery, and thanks to the Fab Four for our great intro music. We're always glad to hear the word help, because our help comes from the Lord Jesus Christ. And here we are again in 2022. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and at his lake office facing the lake, sitting in a chair, George P. Fraser, a man who achieves his New Year's resolutions every year by never making them. George, welcome.
I have the Lenten deal every year, and I always give up being nice to people for Lent, and that one I can achieve. Bill, I don't have an office, okay? It's a studio.
I know. I just make stuff up about you, which is fine.
And yesterday, the furnace went out in the home studio.
Okay.
And gosh, God and I talked like we haven't in a long time yesterday. You lose about 3 degrees an hour. And it was very cold. What was it, 15 below? So yeah. Anyway, thankfully that worked out. I'm glad to be here tonight. It sounds like we got a great show with our guest, Zach.
We do have a great show. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to start the new year out, Bill, with the first three steps.
Okay.
We admitted we were powerless over drugs and alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him, and we understand him to be Jesus. Here's why. We can get a thought in our mind. You know, it's around the new year. I'm going to quit using. I've only met a couple people, Bill, that have a dry date of January 1st. And I would think most everybody who's in the recovery community and in the world of recovery has tried to quit on January 1st. Especially when you don't feel that good when January 1st shows up on the calendar, right? Because mm-hmm. of what you did the night before. But we need to do this deal, not just think about it. We work with a lot of guys in rehab. And I know for me, the three times I went to rehab, I thought they were going to fix me. They were going to change it. Kind of like when you go to the hospital and they operate, take your gallbladder out, you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part about the walk with Jesus, the hard part about getting sober, is you have to do it. And when we work with people, when the light comes on with people, they have to pick up their cross and deny themselves daily. If you're listening tonight and you're struggling with your recovery, you need to add to it, what do I need to do? Jesus said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. What do you need to do? And Bill, we talk all the time. I tell guys, I pray for sobriety, the power, strength, and desire to stay sober today before I get out of bed. That's not original with me. In the Big Blue Recovery book, it talks about awakening. We turn our thoughts to God, and what would he have us do that day? I go to Bob Dylan on this, Bill. You gotta serve somebody. I was gonna do a really bad Bob Dylan. I don't know if that's possible to do a really bad Bob Dylan impression.
Mm-hmm.
But who are you gonna serve today? And I think from the get-go, it's making a decision and acting on it. When we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God, we don't go 500 Jesus Alec for 500 mm-hmm. on Jeopardy. We got to pick up our cross and do something. Bill, I know you're a very disciplined guy. You're not an addict in recovery, but you're a Christian who's in recovery from their life before Christ. Not that it was probably that bad. I'm sure it wasn't as fun as mine, but you work on this. You spend time reading the Bible every day. You work out. You watch what you eat. You get enough sleep. How can you encourage people out there?
I sound pretty boring, George. Do you really want to be telling people that? I do go to bed early, and I do watch what I eat, and I do like to exercise. That's the natural high we're talking about as well, and how important it is to have things that you are planning every day that is going to help advance your walk, your walk in recovery.
Yeah, you make an effort, though, Bill. You're disciplined, and we're supposed to be disciples of Christ. That involves conforming our old way to his new way, fair?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes effort. You try at this. You try really hard. And the old let go and let God is misinformation to a lot of people. You let go of the outcomes. You don't let go of the activity and the effort, okay? You got to try at this. And when you get that, you build some momentum up. And Bill, I know that you get up early and your first thoughts go to God. You read your Bible right away. You have some coffee first, though, don't you?
I get coffee first, and then Bible's open, and I can't wait for it. I look forward to that. That's an appointment time with God I look forward to every day.
Yes. And the reason it's working for you is you're working it. And I keep going back to that, Bill, recently with guys that I'm working with. I know you're working with guys, too. You got to do it. Nike was right. You have to do it. Mm-hmm. This requires some effort. So maybe, and I'm trying to be very encouraging here, one of my defects of character is I can be very lazy, especially when it comes to work or something like that. But I'm not talking about that here, and we're not talking about me. We should be. We're talking about effort to become more Christ-like. And I think he changes your heart and gives you the desire to do it. And all I'm trying to say tonight is, with the new year, get started. Make a list of what you want to do to help your recovery get better. And Bill, I think for a lot of people, it's a missing piece. Hmm. They don't have to recreate everything. They need to keep adding to it. We need to put off the old and put on the new.
George, what if you don't feel like you have a strong purpose in life and that starts to weigh you down? Like, what is my purpose? People around the first of the year, they always think, okay, what do I have any goals or visions or anything I can be pointed in some direction? And if you don't have that, then what?
Well, my purpose before was me.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. And that's actually pretty true. We're our own God. We make our own decisions. Pray to God. It talks about in the book of James, you don't have because you don't ask. God, what would you have me do here? Help mm-hmm. me out. And Bill, you always talk about a community, a new group. We're going to find a community. I encourage people, what's worked really well for me is to ask people for help. Can you help me? How did you do it? We don't have to reinvent the wheel. The people that are doing it, the people that are successful, that have something you want in their walk, that are happy, joyous, and free, how did you do it? And you model after them.
Mm-hmm. I remember talking to a friend whose wife was struggling with an addiction, and as she was trying to take that first step and say, I'm going to surrender my will, she was still struggling with the idea that, are you telling me that at my son's graduation party from high school, I can't have a beer? And at the time, that was about 16 years away, and they're already projecting well into the future about what life might be like. So your mind can play horribly dumb tricks on you. And I think what you have to focus on is the 24-hour period that's ahead of you and nothing else.
Well, that's such great wisdom. Yeah, don't make this harder than it is. Bill, there's something magical in God's timeline about don't worry about tomorrow. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And then my mercies are new every morning. I've talked before, for me, the big fear and anxiety thing I have in my life now is my cancer coming back, and that's a lack of trust in God, I know. But when I have a PET scan, and I think I got the next one in February, and I think about that today in January, I get anxious.
Sure.
I don't know if I get out ahead of God or whatever, but the day of, I'm fine. And I've really learned to stay in today. You know, you can do anything for one day. And I remember when I heard that, I was struggling with staying sober. And I thought, I have never made that. I'm never going to drink again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not drinking today.
Right, right. All right, you're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, bring on our special guest, Zach. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we've got a special guest, Zach, tonight with us, and we're excited to hear his story and learn all about what God's done in his life, because that's always what is the most exciting thing about Real Recovery, is exactly what God has done in a person's life. Zach, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, George and I are real interested to hear about growing up, what it was like, what kind of family you had, what did you go to church, what were your interests?
Yeah, growing up was rough, you know. Father was an alcoholic. Mother and father relationship was broken. Mother left when I was young, and my dad did the best he could. There was no church in my life growing up, so, you know, God wasn't a thing. But in a weird way, I always knew God, you know, as a kid. It was almost natural. So it was an interesting experience. I always relied on him when things were tough at home, so... If that answers your question.
It does, for sure. So did you have brothers and sisters? Was your high school experience a little challenging as well?
Yeah, difficult? Yeah. So I'm born in California, so big change coming to Minnesota.
I have
a twin brother. I have an older brother.
You have a twin?
I do. Fraternal, we look nothing
fraternal,
alike.
Yeah.
Nothing alike. He's got
And you're definitely
hair.
The better looking one
That's
of
right.
the two?
That's
okay,
right.
good. Yeah.
That relationship. We leaned on each other a lot growing up, and so moving out here, my grandma took us in to save us from that mess, and so I went to high school out here in Mound, Minnesota, and that was a tough experience, you know. That's kind of when my use blossomed, and that's when, you know, I started using heroin at 16. I know it's kind of an uncommon story. People are using alcohol and pot, the traditional stuff, but I was using heroin at 16, so that's kind of what my high school experience was like, and it went downhill from there.
George, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, let's roll this back a little. What was the first thing you did? Did you drink before that? Smoke pot?
Yeah, I had some alcohol in grandma's cabinet, traditional story. I smoked a little pot with some friends in high school, and then it just kind of turned into, hey, man, do you want to try some heroin?
Would you smoke it, snort it? How did you start on that?
I started by smoking it off tinfoil. I'll never forget it. And, you know, the first kind of the... typical story you would hear is the first time I felt the effects of heroin, I fell in love. Mm. You know, like it answered my problems. Mm.
And how did you afford that in high school?
Stealing money from grandma and selling stuff.
Were you using as often as you could? Would that be every day or...
Yeah, I mean, once I started, I couldn't get enough of it. So I tried, you know, anything and everything to get it every day if I could.
And the consequences, were you going to school? Were you working? What were you doing?
So I was not working. I couldn't hold a job for the life of me at that age. School, like I said, was a downhill the minute it started. I stopped showing up. I started hanging out with the wrong crowd and, you know, would leave school to basically try to find ways to fulfill my habit.
Wow. Did any legal things pick up here?
Yep. So I went to Juvenile Detention Center in Minneapolis, downtown. For 2 weeks, I had a felony charge for stealing from my grandmother, forging checks, and debit card fraud. So.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm thinking, Zach, you're fearless, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say I am.
I think he's addicted is what he is.
Yeah, but you're opening grandma's checkbook and forging her name.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing when you are hooked on something, you really don't care what the consequences are. You just want to get that get that feeling. Hmm.
Yeah, and you're lost. You're out of control. You do the two-week deal. Did that change your life?
No, it did not. You know, treatment after treatment, just your traditional... licensed treatment, you know, learning about what heroin does to your brain and just the stuff that really didn't give me the motivation and the goosebumps I needed, you know what I mean? Just the life-changing stories weren't there. I had no intention of staying sober at that age. I just wanted to keep doing what I was doing. It was just a temporary vacation.
Gosh, did you go back to school?
Yeah, you know, I went to some alternative schools, high school. I didn't get my... you know, diploma. I actually ended up getting my GED later. But, you know, they tried everything. They tried the alternative schools, high school. You know, they do some school and treatment when you're in treatment at that age. But it was tough.
Wow. So how did we start getting back on the track? Did we have to do some time?
Luckily, I did not ever go into the upstairs of Hennepin County. I was always bailed out. I had some people that bailed me out, and that's a good or bad thing. But essentially, I went into Teen Challenge.
And everything was dropped. Did you have that hanging over your head when you went in?
So when you are a juvenile and you get felony charges, when you turn an adult, or you become an adult, I should say, that stuff gets dropped. It's no longer held over your head.
Okay. What were the circumstances that got you into Teen Challenge, starting with the offense and all that, if you could, you know, let our listeners know that?
Absolutely. So I actually went to college at Augsburg University. So I ended up getting my GED, and, you know, I was young. I turned 21, and that's kind of when I started drinking again. And then that, of course, inevitably led back to heroin. And then I started stealing laptops from the school from other students and pawning it, and got found out, and they kicked me out of school. And my only option at that point was to, you know, be homeless in addiction or go to Teen Challenge.
What charges were you looking at?
Felony theft by swindle.
What does that carry?
That carries, so it's my first time offense that would carry a year in the day in the workhouse.
Okay, we don't want to do that.
Absolutely not.
So the people came by from Teen Challenge, Gina Evans by chance?
No, I actually walked in the doors.
Okay.
So it was your idea to say, this is the next step I need to take.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
It doesn't take, you know, and a lot of people ask, like, it doesn't take a genius to figure out I'm going to die at this point. You know, I've got nothing, no one, credit score is shot, no money in the bank, no job, nobody wants to talk to me. So I was just like, everybody's scared of Teen Challenge. It's a big, big deal. It's a big program, long program, and it takes commitment. So that's kind of like my last stop, you know, and I was willing to give it a try at this point.
One of the things you said, I thought I heard you say, was you started drinking. So did you have some sobriety to get you into Augsburg? Was there a period there where you got your GED and I'm going to go to college?
Yeah, there was. There was about six months or so. And that was kind of when a church got involved in my life, actually, and helped me get my GED, St. Martin's by the Lake in Minnetonka. And, you know, they really were supportive. They drove me to get my GED. They helped get me into college. They raised a bunch of money for me. It was a real blessing.
I know.
I'm familiar with that church. That's great. And it's probably got the best real estate in the state of Minnesota.
It's a beautiful location. No, absolutely.
Yeah. And I know Augsburg has got that wonderful step-up program. Were you at all involved with that?
I was. So Cindy and Tad Piper, their son, Toby LaBelle, they actually go to St. Martin's. So they've known me since I was a child.
The plot thickens.
So, you know, they kind of took me in, and they blessed me beyond belief. And, of course, you know, my actions didn't bless them back, but they definitely helped me get to where I was at. So, yeah, did go to Step Up program, and that was a tough experience. You know, I got kicked out a couple times due to my lapses in use. You're not supposed to use when you're there. It's a sober program.
Right.
But I just, you know, I was young, and I just wasn't ready.
Yeah, but it started you on the road, didn't it?
It did. It really did.
And there was hope, and you saw other people that were succeeding. That had to bear witness to you at some level, didn't it?
Of course. You know, just seeing people become successful and start getting the blessings of life by doing the right thing and sticking it out. I mean, people staying sober through some tough stuff blew my mind. I didn't know how to stay sober when things got tough. You know what I mean? So that was definitely something I wanted.
I know exactly what you mean there. People that are sober and happy and being productive, that wasn't what I was doing, and that wasn't what my friends were doing. So when people do that, you really notice it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you were using when things felt bad to you, but you were probably also using when things felt good for you.
100%.
It didn't matter either way.
It did not matter.
So you see people toughing it out through difficult circumstances, that wouldn't have been the choice you would have taken.
Nope.
But even when things are a little bit on the upswing, there's even more reason to have a little celebration.
Absolutely. You got some money in the bank. You know, you got a job. You got things that you you just got some cushion, right?
Yeah, you've got to reward yourself.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, George, talk about that, if you would, a little bit.
Well, I think, Bill, for a lot of us, using when things are going well is the way we're going to go back to using if we have some sobriety. And what I mean by that is we have acknowledged how when things are going bad, that probably only makes it worse, which it does. But when things are going good, you know, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I overreacted. And I might not do heroin here, but I bet I could drink again.
Yeah. So, Zach, talk about your family situation. You got a fraternal twin brother. What's he saying to you through all this? Is he using as well, or is he not using and trying to speak truth into his twin brother?
So he is actually a heroin addict as well.
Okay.
So, you know, he's recently sober, newly sober. So he's in a sober house right now, and I'm super grateful for that. I definitely believe that throughout this time, me and my brothers just haven't spoken. You know what I mean? We sort of became separated with time and things like that.
So you guys are not on speaking terms right now?
Right now we are because he's sober. My older brother and I are not on speaking terms.
Your older brother?
Yeah, he's actually in prison right now. So
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well,
was he involved in drugs as well?
He is an alcoholic to the core. So he's, you know, the gene runs thick in my family.
Mm-hmm. Well, it got to be.
Can we go?
Oh, go ahead,
yeah,
George.
Can we go back, guys, to when you started into Augsburg? You had stopped using heroin, I'm assuming, and. Why did you drink?
Because I turned 21. I wanted to experience.
Oh, there you go. That's an obvious answer.
I wanted to experience the bars and all the partying stuff. And, you know, it seriously blew my mind that people were staying sober when they turned 21. I'm like, I don't know why you would. You know what I mean? I had to try.
Yes, I do.
But that's life, you didn't want to miss out on.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
But you must have known in the back of your mind that this could be a slippery slope.
I did know that. I did know that.
But you were A-okay with that.
I was. I was willing to take that risk.
Uh-huh. How did you reconcile that with your own mind?
Well, you know, in my head, I was thinking, hey, I'm not an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Heroin was my thing. That's kind of what got me into this mess. I think I can pull it off if I just enjoy some drinks with the bros. You know what I mean?
So you're compartmentalizing a little.
100%.
Yeah, heroin's my problem.
Yep.
If I keep away from that, I'm good.
Yep.
Okay.
But,
George.
There is logic there. Okay. It seems totally insane, and it is. But my problem was with the drug. And Bill, what we see with a lot of guys we work with, and I know I went through this, I'll quit drinking, but I never had a problem with cocaine because I never did it. And so let's go. But eventually you go back to your drug of choice. How long before you went back to heroin?
I would say it probably was about a month or so.
So that experiment worked pretty well for a month, or did you get in trouble on alcohol too?
I did get in trouble with alcohol. That actually was what got me kicked out of Step Up. And then from there, I sort of went downhill and I was like, okay, well, I lost this. I might as well start going back to heroin.
Sure.
All right. Let's take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Our special guest is Zach, and he's right here with us in studio. Taking a nice drink of water. We'll take a short break and be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to the show, Real Recovery, coming at you tonight, Bill and George. We've got Ryan on the board doing what he does so well. And our special guest in studio is Zach. And what a story. He started using heroin at age 16. And that was his drug of choice. And George, I think you got a follow-up question.
Well, yeah, it's such an interesting story, Zach, and I appreciate you coming and telling it. I want to go back, guys, to the part where we have some sobriety and some success, and we start thinking, you know, maybe I could drink. Drugs were my problem. Well, when we do that, we're sober. We make the thought when we're sober. But once we pick up the chemical, we're not sober anymore, and we drift back. Do you think that was satanic deception for you, Zach?
100%. I think that the enemy has had his claws in my life, and especially my thinking, for a very long time.
And Bill, we see that happen with a lot of guys. It seems logical that your problem was with drugs, so you can drink. But what I see over and over again is once they start drinking, then they're high and they want to get higher. So they go back to what they used to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think everybody will listen to a lie because the enemy is really good. That's what he does full time. All he does is lie. And if you don't have truth being spoken into your heart and into your life, you're going to listen to the next available voice.
Yeah, and I think of the scripture, Proverbs, there's a way that seems right to man that ends in death. And that's exactly what happens when we do that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just bring us up to speed as to how old you are when you enter Teen Challenge.
So I was about 24.
Okay, so let's go from, before we get to Teen Challenge, let's go from age 18 to 24. You did some college until you got kicked out. When you got kicked out, were you 21?
Yeah, so I was about, 21, almost 22.
Okay, so that what happened in those 2 years?
So I went from Augsburg to Teen Challenge, their short-term program.
Okay.
I did not go to the long-term program, so I finished their short-term program. I did some outpatient with lodging. You know, you live on site somewhere. I had about another 6 months of sobriety, but then, just started using again.
Why?
Just my life didn't have meaning.
Okay.
It didn't have purpose. You know, I didn't feel like I was going anywhere. I was just going to treatment, attending some classes in the morning, and then free time for the rest of the day, trying to squeeze the gym in there. And it just, my life didn't have meaning.
Mm-hmm. George, I'd love you to speak to that.
Well, yeah, it's a great question, Bill. Why? And I think the reason for most of us is I wanted to. I'm a real big believer, Zach, that we need to get out of our recovery what we were trying to get out of our using.
Yeah.
In other words, we get celebration, high, escape, stress reduction. There's a reason we do it, and it works. And if I just stop using and don't put on anything new, as it talks about it in Ephesians, I'm in trouble. And if my recovery is not better than my using, I'll go back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you did. It's not working. You're not using, but this isn't working.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
And we're real big on real recovery about building a recovery. Put off the old, put on the new.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely what works.
So I'm just still curious, Zach, about those couple of years. How did you spend those 2 years? Were you doing a little bit of jobs here and there and...
Yeah,
still
so when,
getting, were you full-time getting high every day? Or
so when I was at that treatment center, the outpatient with lodging for about 6 months,
okay.
I started using again for about 2 months.
Okay.
And then I went back to Teen Challenge. But that's sort of, again, just the short-term program doesn't really do me much good. Tried to find, success in another transitional housing of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the same story, another 6 months or so, and then just back to using.
Mm-hmm. And do you have anybody at this point trying to speak truth into your life?
Not really, just some LADCs at the treatment center, I had a girlfriend at the time that was kind of sticking by my side, but by a thread, And of course, that was affecting her, so it was pretty much no real life being spoken into me other than just a LADC one-on-one, which was never really honest and open anyways.
Mm-hmm. You still have a place to live?
During this time, when I'm in treatment, I have a place to live. And when you use, you can't live there anymore.
Okay.
So no, very short homeless stints before going back to some sort of treatment.
Some nights sleeping on the streets?
I've never slept on the street. I usually get a hotel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
God's kind of kept me from sleeping in the cold, so I'm blessed by that. But it was never something. It was never a home. You know what I mean? It was always couch, someone's place, or a car, or something like that.
Yeah.
Did you ever wake up and go, "Am I sober today, or am I using today?"
No, I think when I was in the throes of it, you wake up sick. And you feel the anxiety and loneliness, and you're just pretty much like, how can I escape this as soon as possible? What can I steal? What can I do to get heroin in my system to just escape this reality of my situation and the pain I'm in?
That had to be really hard.
It was very hard. And I'll never forget sleeping in a car and waking up, and the inside of the windows had like a layer of ice on them because your body's radiating heat, and it's so cold outside. And I'll never forget that. feeling of just like, man, you know, how am I going to get out of this car and get high as soon as possible?
Hmm.
Did you ever stop to think, how did I get here?
Yeah. I think that's a question I've asked myself, but I never really had an answer to, you know. It's kind of, it's like, because how do you get there? You know, how do you go from being somebody that's, you know, in high school to a few short years later, homeless in a car trying to get high every day, and you're young? Like, how do you get there?
I think all of us that experience what you're talking about ask that question, and I don't think it's the right question. I think the right question is, how do I get out of here?
Hmm.
And obviously you phoned that.
I did.
But you're just trying to survive right then, aren't you?
Yeah, at that point, I'm just trying to do what I need to do to survive in the current circumstances I was in at the time.
Zach, I would be curious to hear about the progression that goes on in a person's mind, and what I mean, your mind, when it came to stealing, when you start with small amounts of money, maybe going back to being 16 from grandma, and you probably tried to see if you could get $5 or $10. But now you're stealing students' laptops at Augsburg. So what goes on in the progression? Like, it started with a small amount. Now it's laptops and whatever I can get.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you ask that, because, like I said, I'm so desperate to just get high at this point and just escape any feeling or pain that I'm feeling at the time, that I knew I would get caught.
Okay.
It wasn't like I was thinking, hey, I'm going to steal this stuff and get away with it. I would just pawn this down the street. You know, I didn't care. And I knew I had a short stint with that, but as long as I got my high for the day, I did not care what the consequences were.
So it's fearless and reckless at the same time.
100%.
Because you're turning in someone's laptop, and for all you know, you're going to get caught that day.
Yep.
But you didn't care.
Nope.
If you got money and could get high that day.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I was willing to throw away my entire college education and all the scholarships and people that were supporting me just to support my habit.
Well, that's pretty raw, George.
It becomes your God.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
absolutely.
I might love my grandma. I might love my parents. But I have to do this. And I believe, Bill and Zach, that when we're in the state of addiction, we have lost our power of choice. And only an outside agency, the Holy Spirit, God, can change that. Because you're going to serve that master.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
All right, Zach, let's get to the doorstep of Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge. What kind of shape were you in? When was the last time you used prior to going in? And what was day one like?
So this last trip to Teen Challenge was different because I chose to go to the long-term program. So you have to start out in short-term still. You have to get grounded. You have to be sober when you get into the long-term program. So, yeah, basically I went to those doors high. My actual last dose of heroin was in their bathroom in the admissions lobby, and I turned in all my stuff to one of the staff there, and I said, all right, let's do this. And yeah, it was not good. Nowhere. Basically, if I didn't get in that day, I'd be sleeping on the street at that point. So it was rough.
So again, you're fearless and reckless.
Yeah,
you're using in their building.
Yep.
And getting into their program.
Yep. And I say that with all seriousness.
I know,
I don't mean any humor in that. It was rough.
It's a sad reality.
It is.
But George, I've heard that story many, many times, that you're gonna have your last blaze of glory using before you go into treatment.
Totally. That's the only way you're gonna get in there for some people.
Mm-hmm. And they were loving, kind, gracious enough to accept you. Did they even know you were high, or because they couldn't have probably taken you in had they known, right?
Yeah, you know. Teen Challenge is a unique program. They have all their medical staff on site. They have a clinic on site, so they can actually deal with you in a detox state in their program, short-term specifically. They did know I was high. They again, I gave them my stuff when I walked in the door, and I said, all right, let's do this. And they knew me, so they've known me sober.
Okay.
Because I'd been there before, and then now they see me, you know, a short period of time later and 20 pounds lighter, just miserable. And so they knew something was up, of course, that I was in rough shape.
Mm-hmm. So where is your heart and mind with God when you're moving into day one of Teen Challenge?
I was uncertain. I really was. I didn't know what Christianity looked like. You know, I went to a very traditional church, St. Martin's by the Lake, and it was, you know, I was scared. I was nervous. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to do. But, you know, you're at that point of desperation where it's the last thing that you have. God's the only thing that you can lean on at this point. And I felt a comfort in that, you know, no matter what. At the end of the day, I did feel a comfort in that. So I had faith that doing something with the Lord is going to bless me more than what I was doing before I got here.
So, George, isn't that that desperate state we talk about?
Yeah, and it's combined with the hope that can only come from God. I think the Holy Spirit convicts you and then offers hope that this is the way out. It's interesting because you want that, but you're struggling. You're using in the bathroom as you go in, but you're there.
Yeah.
That's a real reality for me to get that picture, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you can only do that, it sounds funny, with the strength of the hope from God that this could get better.
Yeah, if God isn't intervening at this point, Zach, there's no hope for Zach.
Yeah, that's 100%. Death is my next destination.
Yeah, and in your heart, you sort of knew those are the options.
100%.
Wow.
That's exactly where I was at.
Had you experienced a loss of other using friends
that
you were using heroin with?
Yeah.
Had you seen some die?
I haven't seen them die in person. I myself have overdosed countless times. I can't even tell you. So it's a miracle that I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
But there are plenty of people that, you know, maybe one day they're at home and they picked up and then, you know, they're no longer with us. It's a very dangerous game.
Right. So did you end up in the hospital? And
yeah, it's weird. You know, you know, for anybody that's overdosed, it's almost like it didn't happen. You know what I mean? It's like that time wasn't there that you were out. So I would, you know, last thing I remember is using the next thing I know, I'm waking up with paramedics and fire department around me. And it's a very weird, surreal situation. And so I've spent some time in the hospital. I've been in detoxes and, you know, they tried everything.
But in your brain, it was more of a non-event, right?
Exactly. It's almost like it didn't happen.
You're back on the streets and you go, let's resume activity.
Exactly, 100%.
That's crazy. Yep. So there's nothing to learn from that, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's the thinking that I had at that time in the hospital is like, that was some good stuff. Not like, oh, I should stop that. It was like, that was some good stuff.
Okay.
And I hope they didn't find it because I really want to do it the minute I'm out of the hospital. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's being in the hospital was just part of the price you paid for the experience you had, and now you want to get back to it.
Yep, and I know if they don't commit you and put you in detox, you got about 4 hours or so before you're on the streets again. So I'll just, you know, it's sad, but like I was down that road before, and I kind of knew what to expect.
All right, let's go back to being a Teen Challenge, and you're wondering what a relationship with God is going to look like. How did you start forming that relationship?
So when I went into long-term, you know, they are flooded with, you know, Christian, that's like their program, that's what they're known for,
right?
And just kind of seeing testimony or hearing testimony and seeing transformation and listening to some of these songs that they would play in chapel, and it did something to me, you know what I mean? I'm like, wow, this isn't so scary. These are normal people that are, you know, worshiping the Lord, that have this relationship with the Lord, and I wanted that at that moment. I really wanted that.
Well, that's the Holy Spirit opening your heart, allowing you to see truth and allowing for this to speak into your life.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I really, you know, I feel like those songs that we listened to in the program is what really did it for me. That's what really spoke to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the Lord is using those worship songs to really speak to me. And that's what moved me the most.
Were you a guy that loved music prior to going into Teen Challenge?
I do love music.
So you love music, and all of a sudden the music you're hearing is really resonating with you.
Yep.
And it's opening your heart, and you're seeing the power of God and the love of the people around you. And you start to think, this is real.
Yeah. Like there are millions of people out here doing this, and look at them, you know, you see stadiums full of just people worshiping the Lord, and it's like, I didn't know that this world existed, you know what I mean? That there's actually this thing out here and this level of a relationship with the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Our special guest is Zach, and we're hearing his amazing story, what God's doing and done and is going to do in his life. We'll hear a little bit more about what he is doing now and the work that God has laid out for him. After a short break, we'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
We are back with our guest, Zach, tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery of Bill and George. Ryan is on the board. Quite a story tonight, George, starting with Zach getting involved with heroin at age 16, and then a lot of use, and then it comes time for him to get into recovery at Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge, and he sees what the Lord is going to do in his life and who Jesus is, and starts a brand new transformation.
Gives us a lot of hope, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious as to, once he decided God changed his heart, I want this, how did he do it?
Well, that's a big question, Zach. Go ahead, if you can answer that one.
Yeah, that is a tough question. You know, how I did it, I stuck around, and I just knew that, like, God loves me no matter what I've done or the things that I'm coming from, and that he wants to prosper me, and that if I just kept Tom Rose over at the Teen Challenge program is very instrumental in kind of that transitional point between short-term and long-term. And, you know, just saying, come on, man, just keep pushing forward. And so that's what I did. I didn't know what to expect. I really didn't even know how to do it. I just did what I was told at the time. I showed up to my programming. I dove into the work that we have in the program, and I started practicing prayer. I started practicing praying with other people, and just trying to be the best person that I could be in that program, transforming my thought life, things like that.
I'm curious, Zach, given the fact you had a troubled upbringing and you had alcoholism in your family, is this the first time you had a community of friends that you were felt comfortable with and could trust?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can all relate that the people we're rolling with aren't really trustworthy. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, being in that program, it's like genuine love between other brothers that are going through the same thing. I don't think you can really match that anywhere else. We're all trying to rebuild our lives, and we're all trying to be different people. And there's something special about those types of relationships. So 100% different.
Yeah, because in a way, you don't trust the friends you hang out with, and I would imagine at some point you don't trust yourself.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
Don't trust myself, and definitely don't trust the people I'm with. And so, you know, there were some trust issues with those people. And some along the lines of like, hey, maybe I never see these guys again. You know, I've been in treatment enough to know that, like, they can be sober in here, but once they're out there is the real test. And you know, I've seen a lot of people pass away after finishing a program, and it's heartbreaking. So there was that trust there too. I didn't really have that level of faith yet in what God can do to the people.
So what do you understand to be one of the keys to maintaining? I mean, George is 36 years of sobriety.
Yeah, that's amazing, by the way.
It is really amazing. I have that number right, George? Is it 36 or?
No, you're a little low, Bill, but, you know, I'm
humble.
I don't
yeah, you're not going to bring it up, rub it
no,
in my face.
No, I wouldn't even bring that up.
Yeah. Humility.
Pretty yeah. embarrassing.
Let's yeah. say 37 then yeah. Of sobriety, which is amazing. Zach, what do you?
I got today.
All that's right. It. Do you have an idea as to how you understand you're going to live life today with hope for tomorrow?
Yeah, maintaining that relationship with the Lord and leaning on him through all my troubles.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fantastic and solid support network that has really been instrumental in transforming my thought life and praying against those attacks from the enemy. I know to do that, I have like this arsenal, this weapon in my closet that I can use against those attacks, and it's worked. It's really worked. And Rick Whip, my mentor, has been just absolutely instrumental in just being a person that can listen to me. Like, hey, you know, actually calling before you want to pick up, or hey, this is what I'm thinking right now, and I know it's crazy, but here you go, and help me out with this, and just learning how to navigate that stuff. I really believe that the thought life is one of the most important things in a person's recovery. I think if your thought life is not in check, and you're not balancing the Lord in your thought life, it's just, you know, that's where it all begins, is in your brain, you know. And so,
George, is that the idea of taking all thoughts captive to the Lord?
Absolutely it is. And you say such great stuff that you follow up with your actions. He said, I did what they were doing. I pushed forward. It starts in our head, but we have to follow through. Absolutely. I think the longer we fantasize about using, the closer it is to reality. Zach, I've come to believe in my life, whenever I fantasize about anything, I'm saying God's reality isn't good enough for me, and I got to bring that one back and get into reality and in tune with God.
Yeah, that's very true.
Didn't mean to kill the show with that.
No, you didn't at all. You did slow it down a little bit, but it didn't kill it, which is good.
I kind of brought it down about five notches.
Yeah, which is fine. You know, we're all...
But I really think that what you say is true. I'm transformed by the renewing of my mind, and I've got to saturate my mind with godly wisdom.
Yep.
Otherwise, I'm on my own, and I know what I do.
Absolutely.
And, Zach, I love what you said about you've got this arsenal now. You've got... You've been trained. You're equipped to deal with situations. You're a tactical person now, in a way, as to how to deal with some of the fiery darts that are coming your way.
That's absolutely true. You know, just this idea that there's this, you know, the idea that we're in a spiritual battle, right? And so these attacks are spiritual, and you got to deal with them on a spiritual level. So praying against that stuff. I mean, I as a person have really discounted the power of that. And when somebody opened up my eyes against this spiritual battle that is happening all around me, and that relationship with the Lord has really equipped me for that.
That's powerful. I love that you are leaning on the Lord, and you are going to His Word and being in prayer and in fellowship, and you've got a mentor, and you're involved in a church. It sounds like this whole program, Zach, is working pretty good.
Absolutely.
Kind of the poster boy here.
I don't know about that, but I definitely think, you know, it does work. It really does. And I just, if there's anybody out there that doesn't think so, it does. I've been there.
Yeah, because if you were going to be encouraging someone to have a good program, many of the things that you're living today would be on that list of things to do.
Yeah, you know, and I was just thinking as you were saying that, being where I'm at and doing what I've had to do, I'm still a broken person. You know what I mean? I'm by no means perfect. I'm just as close as the next guy. I just got a better, bigger net, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if we were talking about my thought life on this show, I don't think you guys would be able to put me on the show. You know, I'm definitely transformed, but I'm aware that I am a human being at the same time, and that's okay. And I think I was thinking that being sober and being on the other end was supposed to mean that I'm supposed to be perfect, but I'm not. And that's where I struggled a lot and fell a lot in the past.
I wouldn't be on the show either. In fact, you know, I've always been surprised that I am.
Yeah.
I think when we stay in our brokenness, we keep God in His right place. You know, how needy we are.
Absolutely.
That's a good spot for us.
Yep.
There's a great line from a book that I'm reading called The Mortification of Sin by John Owen. He says, "The choicest believers who are assuredly freed from the condemning power of sin ought yet to make it their business all their days to mortify the indwelling power of sin." So we do have to work every day at killing the sin, the indwelling sin that still is in us.
Absolutely. Still a human being. Still a human being.
Yeah. And that thought is inspired by Romans 8:13. I don't know if you know that verse. I can give it to you real quick. George, you know that passage in Romans 8?
I don't have the address.
Yeah,
no.
I'll give it to you. It says, "For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live."
Amen.
There you go.
Amen. Thank you for reading that.
Yeah. Zach, it's been a delight having you here. I just, your story is incredible, and what God's done in your life is very inspirational.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And it's always good to see you guys.
Thank you so much. Georgie, that's all the time we have today.
Thanks, Zach.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that is a 2022 award-winning episode of Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. And if you missed any of this, you can head to myfaithradio.com, check out the podcast. Maybe you know someone who would benefit from hearing Zach's story. That's all the time. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.